Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of UAP Studies Podcast. This is, we're in full swing now, Michael, with interviews. I think today we got two interviews that we're doing, but I love these Sundays because I get to look forward to them all week. I get to research the people that we have on. I've been addicted to Twitter and get into arguments with idiots. I don't know why. I do it to myself. It is, isn't it? Just like, can I outward Smith this person? It's really dumb. I shouldn't be doing that, but I've been doing that this week, so pretty bad. But otherwise than that, we're doing really good. Momentum for this year looks awesome. Today, our guest is Sydney Morrison. She is joining us from the United States, actually. Sydney is from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. I said that correctly. I didn't butcher it like the English do. She's actually working right now or studying film and media studies as a screenwriter or screenwriting, I should say. In the past, she had seen a UFO and an encounter, of course, and it got her and her friends started at the Yale University to form Yale Student UFO Society. And I saw her actually on LinkedIn and I thought, how brilliant is this to see the youth taking the helm and starting this right away at a younger age than we did, which is awesome. I mean, we had to get a swift kick in the ass in 2017 to get ourselves started. But, you know, the youth don't have to wait for that. And guys, Sydney and Michael, it's funny because I posted today on Twitter the demographic. So it's mostly men that listen to us. There's 11% of our audience is female, but predominantly the age is between 27 to 67 years old is the age of interest, the highest age of interest. Mm-hmm. And the United States being 55% of our listener audience. So I thought that was really interesting because one, I want to see more girls, women into this subject. It's hugely important. We've interviewed a lot of them, but there needs to be more. This can't be a male dominated field. We need people from all walks of life to think and help and contribute. So
yeah, because certainly this isn't just this issue doesn't just affect, you know, like white males above 30 years old or whatever.
Yeah. And even it comes down not only to citing these things, but the abduction phenomenon includes women like crazy. You know, and this is super important. We need to cover this from everybody needs to be involved in this. But seeing the youth, especially what Sydney is doing at Yale and getting people talking about this is amazing. And this is exactly the momentum that, let's not call it ufology anymore because that comes with baggage, but what the progress of, you know, the field of study is needed. And she's doing that. So Sydney, thank you so much for joining us today. This is awesome.
Thank you guys for having me. I'm really excited.
Yeah.
Good. Michael, so, I'll let you shoot the first question, my man.
Yeah, let's do it. So you started the Yale Student UFO Society. Is that the acronym, the initialism, YSUS?
Yeah, correct. YSUS.
YSUS. And how long ago was that?
We are officially a club starting in August of this year, so August of 2023. We've slowly been building membership. You know, it is still a controversial topic at Yale. You know, it's not something that your average Yale student thinks about. So we are just working on, you know, getting the word out, basically.
As far as I know, you've started the first Ivy League student UFO group. So congratulations for doing that. What was it like starting it? And like, what experiences led you or you and your co-founders to decide to start a group? Were you yourself experiencers?
Yes. So amongst my team, I am the only experiencer. And this happened while I was away from Yale on leave. I saw a UFO with my best friend. Like, we saw the same thing. And then we saw a creature, which led us to believe it was probably an alien or a non-human intelligence. It was most obviously a non-human intelligence, because it was humanoid and seemed to, you know, have a brain. But so when I came back to campus, I was just like, I should start a UFO club, because I don't know what I saw, and I would love to talk to other people about it and try to figure it out. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Do you want to tell us more of the details of that encounter, the experience? Like, what did you see and where?
So this was in Spokane, Washington, at a place called Drumheller Park, which to my knowledge, was one of the last places where the Spokane tribe was living, in more of a communal style. And there was a like circle of stones there. And it's kind of sad that I haven't researched it a lot. I am a Cherokee community member, not enrolled, but I am of descent. And I don't know, it's just hard to research Native American stuff because you kind of need to get it from like real people versus like something you read online. But we were at this stone circle that was somehow a ceremonial site, and we saw a UFO, and it was exactly how they describe them in like, official discourse these days, where they move at like impossible angles that like, it wasn't a helicopter because the way it like pulled back and then did like a 90 degree turn,
Defies logic, right? Yeah.
completely. It was almost like I describe it as like being in a video game, like someone picked it up and moved it with a mouse. But it was just this like dark craft with twinkling lights on it, probably the size of a car, but it was only there for like a second. So we looked at each other and we were like, okay, but we kind of got freaked out. And then like a minute later, we just hear like a stomp in the leaves, and about like 15, maybe like only 13 feet away from us
Oh,
was this.
wow.
Yeah, it was actually pretty close. It was closer
Really
than I
close.
thought. Yeah, because when I went back to the spot, I was like, oh, this was like much closer than I realized. But it was staring at us from the tree line, and it was this 8 foot tall humanoid figure. And so it was nighttime, but you could tell that it was like pitch black, like
Darker
darker
than the
than
shadows around it, maybe? Is that the
exactly.
idea?
It wasn't just like
Yeah.
shadowed, it was like strangely pitch black. It had two eyes that were like glinting like cat's eyes,
Okay.
and it was like blinking, and like staring at us and like moving a little bit, and it would like you could hear its footsteps in the leaves, so it was very corporeal. We basically freaked out, and it was standing between us and her car, so we just like held hands and like walked toward her car, and at one point it was only like 3 feet away from us, just like stomping around, and then we got in her car and like drove away. And looking back, I wish I would have tried to communicate with it or something, but it was just too scary in the moment, so.
Did you, and I ask this to everybody that is very close proximity to one of these entities, but do you remember any smells?
No, actually.
No? Okay.
Yeah.
So just the nature around you is all you smelled. There was no distinct, no sulfur smelling, no egg, rotten egg smells or anything like that.
No, and I have heard that that's something people report, but it was, yeah, not smellable, I guess.
Okay.
Did you get the any sort of emotional sense that it was aggressive towards you or curious or just you said stomping? Was that just because it was kind of a lumbrous creature, or was it doing it as sort of out of an attempt to kind of intimidate you
No,
away
good
from the site,
question.
maybe?
Yeah, good question.
Yeah, I don't think it was stomping in like a, like the way like a moose would or anything to like scare you. It was just, like making very heavy footsteps. It seemed very like it seemed very it was not concerned with showing itself to us. Like it was very much like, I'm here, look at me. It was making eye contact with us, and I got shivers down my spine, and so did my friend, and we both said that that was the first time we'd have like cartoonish shivers down our spines. So we were very afraid, got very negative vibes from it. Like we felt kind of like prey, and it was negative, but that could have just been, because it's a new experience. So I don't know what its intentions were, but we did feel negative about it.
What's really odd too is that for some reason these entities seem very familiar with us and we're not with them, which is that's the creepy aspects. Like how are they this comfortable around us? I never understood that myself because to us, we see them, we panic, or I could only imagine the shock of, when you see it in full clarity too. Like some people see broad daylight. It's just, I can't believe what that does to your nervous system. But with your friends, so did you guys talk about this openly? Was this something you guys didn't talk about? Or is this something you're like, hey, let's start a club, let's look into this?
Well, we went home that night to my place, and like we like looked up the stone circle and we're like, okay, what is this? Where were we? Ran into some like man in the maze folklore, which I have yet, I haven't really researched since then. Because like personally, it's all a little bit frightening for me still, so I don't really like to look into it, although I'm sure I will over the course of my life. But we kind of stopped talking about it, to be honest. After that night, it kind of was something we didn't really revisit a lot just because it was so scary. But that night we were up for several hours, like trying to research what we saw.
Was your
No
friend also
missing
a
time,
Yale
right?
student? Oh, sorry.
No missing time,
No
yeah.
missing time, okay.
Is your friend also a Yale student? Are they one of the people that you started the club with, or did you go back
Nope.
to Yale and then do it yourself?
No, yeah, just dear friend who now lives in California, not a Yale student, however, totally supported me starting the club and thought it was a good idea. So, yeah.
So when you go back to Yale and you start, I mean, you have something in you that's like, I need to find other people who've had these experiences. Is that kind of the deal? How did it work out? What was motivating you, and how did you go about actually like finding others with interest?
Yeah, so I mainly just asked some of my existing friends to put their names down so we could, get the club. I don't even know if I should say that, but like then I hung up posters.
That's how every club is started, don't you? You did just fine. Don't worry about it. Yeah.
Yeah, so because they were interested, they're like, aliens, yeah, sure, I'll go to a meeting. So I hung up posters and then got like a lot of interest for the email list. And eventually got a co-president and treasurer, and shout out Jay and Remy, and got some graduate student advisors, and yeah, we've just been a little like family trying to do our best ever since. We don't have like the best attendance at meetings, but I'm not discouraged just because it is a new club. We are going to be making merch, so that is coming soon,
Nice.
with like Yalians, and our
Nice. Yes.
hats. We
A
think
good
that'll help.
pun. A good
Yeah.
pun at volumes.
Use it. Yeah, use it. That's awesome.
So
Well,
we.
with the so the club started back in August, you said about of last year. So you enlist your friends and stuff like that, but what's the main reception that you receive from Yale, or what is the how are other students looking at this group? Like, what's your take on what their thoughts are right now on this?
Unfortunately, I think, we've had a lot of people come to like one meeting and then almost do it as like a joke and then not really come back. I think for a lot of people, it's just too much for their bandwidth. Like there's a lot of, like real politics to worry about and like more important issues. And I think if you haven't had an experience with it, sometimes it's difficult to care about the subject. But for the people who do attend, I think it means a lot to them because we get really good questions and we do have like really interesting discussions. And that's kind of the nice thing about doing this at college is you have, people who are like actively involved in whatever research they're doing or, specific academic interests they hold. So you end up getting like really nice philosophical questions, and that really kind of keeps us like sticking to the truth basically in like whatever way we can.
So I'm a philosopher, and what are the philosophical questions that you find yourself like most interested in? I mean, I'm not a philosopher of UAP exactly. I don't know anybody who can claim that they are yet, but philosophy of science, philosophy of technology and ethics, philosophy of religion, those sorts of things are my formal training. So it does give a kind of background for thinking about some of these things. What do you think is like the most interesting question that you can talk about?
I think like the nature of these entities, because it almost connects to physics too, like the question of could they possibly be spirits even, for people who have like a Catholic background, for instance, like the whole demon question, which I don't personally believe in, but it's still worth discussing. Like, could they be interdimensional? And this is why I really hope we get like more STEM support for the club, because I don't feel qualified to answer those types of questions when it comes to like other dimensions or universes, but Yeah, I guess, the question of like, could they even travel here from other planets? Like, is that even technically possible if they were like, traditional aliens or whatever?
It's
Cool.
fascinating. Yeah, it's fascinating because I like the all of the above mentality right now, because we can't dismiss anything. Like, people say, well, are they interdimensional, extraterrestrial, are they ultra terrestrial, are they, and I think, well, why can't it be all of the above? And that's the scary bit. That maybe is why the government can't say anything, because there are some from different dimensions, there are some from Zeta Reticuli A and B, there are some from, the ocean. Like, we don't know. And oftentimes, I think our arrogance as a species keeps us very blinded. And we only have five senses. And out of those five senses, they're very limited on what they can do. So we base our entire metaphysical objectivist opinions based on that. But subjectively, what we experience is different. Like, my reality is different than both your realities, because different life experiences. And I think that's part of this phenomenon, is that once you have this experience, people don't understand it's not just a story that you're telling, Sydney, but there's an emotional attachment to this now. If you were frightened, you had an emotional reaction to the proximity of these entities, or it changes things. Like, you drive home, you go to work the next day. Like, how do you cope with that? It's hard, right? We talk to many people that have had these experiences, whether out in nature, which seems to happen quite a bit to people, but even in their own homes. So it's about talking about that. It's about people being honest. And to be honest, the youth of today are experiencing this as much as we did back in the 80s and 90s, and then the 70s before us in the 60s. It hasn't changed. You guys are going to experience this as much as we are. So talking about it maybe is your generation's greatest achievement. Of when it comes down to UAP, is even starting what you start. Like, that takes a lot of courage to do what you're doing, to put yourself out
Our
there. Like,
parents' generation, like you had to be abducted, you and your wife had to be physically abducted and like have a bunch of needles stuck in you by gray beings before you'd come out and be like, something strange happened to me. I'm not quite sure what it is, but it's like much easier for people now to be like, I just saw a strange thing. And maybe it also has to do with the fact that we're taking more people out of different groups more seriously. Like, you were saying, Jason, that there are other boundaries to, I mean, there are other dimensions to this, like the emotional dimension, like the phenomenon isn't just the strange lights in the sky moving at certain angles or whatever. When you had your experience and then brought it back and then started a club, do you think of the experience that you had that needs some sort of explanation? Is it just the thing in the sky and what ever was on the ground, or do you also include in it the fact that it was at a sort of ceremonial site of a certain ethnic group that had practiced a certain religion and worldview? Are those things like part of the conversation in your mind, or are you content at this point to sort of abstract the experience into this kind of general form of like thing in the sky, thing on the ground, how does its machine work or whatever? Does that question make sense? It's kind of all over the place.
No, that makes sense. For me, this is just how I look at life. There are some things that I really believe in, like, truth, love, all that kind of thing. However, beyond that, I don't really believe in anything completely. And so for me, it's the same with the NHI sighting. I have my guesses about what it might be. Like, people have said that was probably a reptilian who was like shape-shifting, and I'm like, okay, that might make sense. In regards to the Native American question, there are plenty of stories of non-humans in Native folklore, like storytelling, that you just have to respect because stories aren't lies, in our culture the same way. Like stories might be considered kind of like fairy tales
They're
in
just
like
true or false.
European. So you have to take them a bit more seriously. So I think that they're connected. I want to learn more about it though, and I know maybe along my path I'll be lucky enough to have the chance. So
And you brought up, Yeah, and you brought up a good point, Sydney, about the stories and listening to people. Everybody's got a story, but it's in the details. You know, if somebody's fibbing, if the details don't add up, and there's certain details sometimes that people say that you're like, oh, the hair on my arms just raised. It's like, why would that detail be so important? But it is, and that's the thing is getting that, because we mentioned this quite a bit. Yeah, the crafts, oh my God, they're fascinating. How do they fly? But the entities behind the crafts are what's more fascinating, because they're the ones who create the craft. Their technology, wherever they're from, must be like, imagine their living quarters, what that must look like. It's crazy. But it's humbling ourselves enough to saying, hey, maybe as smart as we think we are, we got universities and all that, we're missing a big chunk of the puzzle here. And that's the point, is to get in academia, like Michael yourself, Sydney yourself, like being in university and saying, hey, I want to put this on the table, or I want to talk about this. It takes a lot of guts because nobody's done that before. And not to say that you're going to face judgment, ridicule in some ways, whether it's
Oh,
to
you
your
totally will. Don't worry about it. You will,
yeah.
but
Oh,
you'll
hands
do
down.
that. That will
Yeah.
happen no matter what you do in life, though. Like,
Yeah.
there's nothing. If you decide you want to be a novelist, there's a group of people who are going to be like, you shouldn't be a novelist. You're never going to be able to make any money doing that. So it's just like, fuck it. You have to go with whatever
Yeah.
your actual interests are and take
And
yourself
somebody needs to do it,
away
right?
from them.
Like
Yeah.
Sydney, you said it yourself, somebody needs to do it. Nobody else is doing it. Why not me? And that's what creates these things. That's what gains momentum. And you should be proud of that, because I know that maybe the team is not as solid as you want it to be in the future. But you know, I would recommend, I don't know how far you guys are from each other, Michael. How far are you from Yale?
Very far,
Very far. Okay.
like an 8 hour.
Okay, well, that's but I was saying, like, even getting speakers to come in and volunteer, maybe like even an hour, 2 hours of their time to talk to your group. You know, there's plenty of professors in the scientific community or coalition that'd be more than willing to help you guys out, because they're so generous with their time, Sydney. Like, everybody in this field is so generous with their time. Even if you did like a Zoom Skype meeting with, like, you know, Jacques Vallée, whatever, for the university, he'd be totally down for that. And that's what's going to gain traction too, is just bringing people in saying, look, we got this guy, come pay attention. And it's such a great idea, man. Like, I when I saw that you were doing that, and especially at Yale, it's not just like, you know, that Yale's a big university, right? Or big, it's a big institution. So it makes progress to me seem possible. Right, because it is the youth that are so important in this. You guys are taking over when we get older. It's your turn, right? So the more you're educated now, the more you know about this, the better you'll do, better than us. You'll discover things that we haven't discovered. So, man, I'm so happy for this. So, we're going to talk a little bit about your interest now. So, you've been researching, I'm guessing, this phenomenon since, you know, your experience. What are you finding to be the most credible evidence or the most credible stories so far in your search?
Oh boy. Well, it's hard to say like what's credible beyond my own experience. I will say that like I'm finding that it's useful to mostly like believe the things that are said the most and like talked about the most, because if, you know, more people are claiming they've seen certain things, it's, I mean, to me it seems like you could probably bet on it having more truth to it. Also, looking at things that have appeared a lot throughout history, like other cultures, you know, reporting different types of beings, I think that that is usually something that rings like fruitful for me to look into. You know, including Native American stories. Because when you're looking at, you know, like cultural folklore, there's less of like a reason for people to be lying or like making things up, because it has like hundreds, sometimes thousands of years of people repeating these stories. And it just seems to hold more water for me.
Sure. Yeah. Are there particular Native American sort of aspects of the tradition that intrigue you, or is this still something you're kind of looking into in your private life and maybe not ready to talk about yet? Because if your ideas aren't fully formed, I don't want you to feel like pushed to say anything there. But if you do have thoughts.
Well, I'm actually, hopefully, I've been given a tentative yes, talking to a storyteller in the Cherokee community about a certain type of being, but I don't want to give it away because I'm trying to write a script about it. So,
Oh, cool. Yeah.
yeah, so hopefully you can see the movie in a couple years, but
It would be wonderful. And maybe we have some tentative guesses of what the type of being may be, but we won't
so.
hazard any guesses.
Question
Let
for you
it.
guys, because you guys are both in involved in these studies, but what would create an actual let's say a course on this? Like what you would have to build it from somewhere, and there's so much to cover, but what would it take to actually build a curriculum or something that people can actually study?
I have a UAP course curriculum that I made in my spare time. I can answer this question immediately. No,
I'd like to hear from both of you guys. Yeah,
yeah.
absolutely.
Well, I would love to know what a student would want to hear in a UAP course. But from the professor sort of angle of it really would not be hard because almost every department in our course catalog, every department has a course catalog. They have a list of courses that have been vetted by the university, and they meet all the requirements for what courses have to do, blah blah blah. And you can pick from those courses and say, I'm going to teach this, and you just sort of, as a professor, you just sort of like change it in whatever way you want, but you stay within that framework. But every department has what's called a special topics course, which is just a general do whatever the hell you want course, and any department who wants could have a special topics course and call it philosophy of UAP or sociology of UAP or UAP in literature, mathematics of UAP, whatever like department you're
It
in. You
has to
could
be a
do that.
theme, though. Yeah.
I mean, that would be the smart way to do it if you don't, it's because basically the theme is what gets students to sign up to the course,
Right.
right? You're trying to see, you've got to make money, right? You got to get enough people to sign up to the course. But any department can do this. It does not require the dean to say it's okay. You just go to your chair. If I'm a professor in a department, I go to a chair and I say, I want to teach a course on UAP. I'm pretty sure I can get enough students to do it. Here's what I want to call it. Here's the syllabus. If you have a good relationship with your chair, they'll probably just say, okay. And then it's on the course offerings. And if enough students sign up, you get to teach it. And if they don't, enough students don't sign up, then they don't want to pay you to teach nobody. But yeah, I mean, and I have, syllabi and all sorts of ideas about what should be covered in a course. But I would love to know, Sydney, what if you saw courses being taught at Yale on UAP, like what are the questions you would want to be answered in that course? Or like not answered, but at least addressed.
I think it would be great to start with the physics. Like at the Soul Conference, I heard a talk from Dr. Kevin Knuth, which like went into all the data that we have on UAP, how much energy they must be giving out to travel at those speeds and withstand those G forces, the materiality they must like be in possession of that we don't have. That I think would kind of get people on the same level of like, okay. We have data on UAP. They are a physical reality, not just like phantom ghosts in the air. I think that would set the groundwork for like the rest of the semester. And then beyond that, I think, the storytelling going into like just even including like modern storytelling of just things that people pass along on the internet or on social media about strange things that have happened. And like, how do you? Almost like how can you tell if people are lying or if they're, like even like how can you tell if someone's crazy? Like I know it's kind of a weird thing to ask, but like as investigators it's kind of important. And then the third thing I would say would be kind of the fun, and this is why I think it, like a Yale course on UFOs would be really great. Sorry, I use UFO and UAP kind of interchangeably.
Oh yeah,
But
that's fine. Yeah.
yeah, we do
okay.
too.
Okay, wonderful. Just the philosophical questions about like, gosh, there was another talk at the Soul Conference about animism. I think it was from Dr. Scafish. I'm sorry. I feel bad, but that was incredible. Him saying thinking animistically about the world will probably help us conceptualize non-human intelligence. So stuff like that, I think, would be really helpful, especially for young people.
That's so interesting that you bring up animism because, as in the past 3 years that I've been really obsessively studying this and seeing all the ways that it branches out into other sort of areas of interesting study, maybe the most significant change in my worldview has been a broader acceptance of some sort of animistic model of reality, which is something that 5 years ago I would have probably kind of chuckled at the idea that there could be animists living among us who have degrees and understand science. But it also shows like how little we know of what is actually like a tenable, reasonable worldview. I didn't even know that such people existed. Now I'm sort of one of them. So it's kind of the part of the
It's
ontological shock, I guess, of
yeah. Nikola Tesla once said that the best way to innovate and to think creatively is to be alone. And he would stress that on everything. Like, you need to be alone and it'll come to you. It's like a source. But if you're mixed in with other people, you get mixed in with their ideas, their fundamental beliefs, and it blocks you from receiving that. And I truly believe, Nikola Tesla, being who he is, I 100% believe he was accurate. I mean, we wouldn't be able to do this right now if it wasn't for him, right? So he was right. Like, we need to think outside the norms of not so much collectively. We need to put our data together, but each individual has something unique to bring to this, has a unique angle and contribution to this, which is important. And we mentioned this over and over again. There is no messiah of disclosure. It's not going to be a one person, one organization. It's a global event. It's a global momentum, which is great. But yeah, I would love to see that these courses, being given in universities. I know some of them are. I think Manitoba University is teaching courses on that. A lot of people are giving their complete collection of their research to universities and libraries, which is amazing. And that's what we need. It's just, we take the punches as we go, but we keep putting our foot forward. We keep putting the data out. But that's what's needed. Okay, so we did a quick edit here, guys, just because we want to have a side note conversation. We don't normally edit these parts out, but we do. This was important as well. So one of the factors that is really important in what Sydney's telling us here is that while she stayed at the hospital, she should have been safe in her room. But then something happened when she's in the shower, and all of a sudden she's not safe. She's several minutes or hours later, who knows, finding herself awakening in a room where she doesn't remember getting to, with scars and wounds that she doesn't remember. What's really interesting is that I don't hear about Men in Black or the people that come to look for certain people much anymore. So it's very interesting, Sydney, that they did that. That means you piqued their interest. Do you think it's starting the club specifically at the school that got you targeted, or do you think it was your experience or what you're currently doing in your research?
All I can guess is that because it happened in the Yale Hospital for students, and it was a month after I'd been on campus starting the Yale Club, that somebody thought that I deserved to be scared a little bit, that they wanted to let me know, like, as David Grush has said, that they could touch you wherever you are, like, even at Yale. And I think they did, go after the wrong girl, like, I'm not gonna back down.
You're gonna fight back. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna stand up for people who, encounter these sorts of things, and that we can be intelligent about it. We can investigate things and get to the truth. Like, Yale's motto is Lux et Veritas, and that's light and truth. And they might have tried to send a message by coming after me at my school, but, like, I just learned that there will always be good people who want to help you, because the only reason I knew anything happened was a fellow patient was, like, brave enough to say, like, "Are you Sydney Morrison? While you were in the shower, these men in expensive black suits were looking for you." And I was so out of it, I just didn't ask her any further questions. But if that woman hadn't have, tried to find who that person was and tell them what happened, then I never would have known what would have gone on. So
Unbelievable.
And who knows how many people have had that, right? Who knows how many people have had that experience and don't remember it? It's
Yeah, or
crazy.
didn't have somebody tell them. Can we run the story through from beginning to end real quick, just so that when, we make sure that we've got a good clear telling of it. So you went to the student health center. Well, tell us starting there. Where you went and why and what happened from then on.
So I remember taking a shower, going into the private, it's not like a communal area, shutting the door, getting in the shower. I remember being in the shower. And then the next thing I know, I'm sitting in the TV room. Other patients are around me. And, I look down and like, I don't remember getting dressed. And it's almost like somebody else dressed me, or I dressed in a hurry because I had an undershirt on, but only the top button was done. And I would never do that. It just is not how I wear clothes. And then this woman sits down next to me and she's like, "Are you Sydney Morrison?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And then she's like, "While you were in the shower, like I said, these men in expensive black suits were asking where you were." And I was like, "Oh," like, and I was still very kind of out of it. Like, I
Phase hazy, yeah.
hazy, totally just felt weird. Felt like I was in a trance a little bit. So I didn't really respond to her. I was just like, "Oh, okay." Like, I think I knew something had just happened, and to me, that like confirmed that something had just happened, and I didn't ask any further questions because I was pretty like something, I was not like my normal self.
And
So
this feeling of being out of it and sort of suddenly finding yourself in a spot that you don't remember going to and being strangely dressed. Did that was that in any way normal or explainable in terms of why you were in the hospital in the first place?
no, never had an experience like that.
How about physically, Sydney? Did you feel sick? Like the marks and the yet on your body, did they hurt?
I didn't, they weren't big enough for me to feel them until I actually got home that day and undressed and noticed them. So
Oh, wow.
not like terrible.
I think, if that was the case, then, targeting you because it's Yale University. It's a big one. The thing is, these groups, whoever they are, they keep tabs on everybody. There's no way they're not keeping tabs on this podcast, but they keep tabs on everybody. What are you up to? What are you doing? I've spoken to investigators that were followed by unmarked cars, men in black, if you will. And while they're on the highway, they blank out and they're 45 minutes further down the road and they don't remember how they got there. Another option, the weapons, the technology that are being used against us, the experiencers or the witnesses, make no doubts that there's crimes against humanity that is taking place. If a group, an underground group is able to find you in a hospital for crying out loud, just maybe even to find out what you know. Right? Like they drug you and they find out, like, what is actually, does she know? What's she up to?
And the reason you were in the hospital had also nothing to do with UAP or anything like that.
Nope. It's not like I saw anything and, got
Yeah.
called crazy. Nope, just yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. That's crazy. Have you had any further encounters like this? Like any other weird blips that have taken place in your life since then?
Or strange people or anything.
Thankfully, no. I did see a UFO on Yale campus, which was cool.
Nice.
I actually was told by an alumni that he saw the same UFO in a different month, but we both saw a turquoise oval just kind of like go through the sky. But
This is above Yale.
yeah.
Weird. They are known to go around schools, usually more elementary schools than secondary schools, but they are known to hang around there for sure. I think there's an interest between intelligent people, students, and these things. I don't know what the connection is, but even the Zimbabwe aerial school phenomenon, why they came for the teacher, we found out later, 3 days later, they came for the teacher, but the kids weren't lying. Like, these things landed and they talked to them, which is
Same
crazy.
thing in the New Zealand school.
What's that?
Same thing in the New Zealand school.
Yeah, there's some in England as well, Australia, you name it. This stuff happens. The problem is that none of us are taking it seriously, so we keep dismissing it. You guys ever learn like a new word? I'm always fascinated. I always learn a new word that I've never heard before, and all of a sudden I hear it everywhere. I'm like, how is that possible? It's because it's always been said, but I always overlook it because my brain doesn't know it. So it dismisses it. It's the same thing with this phenomenon. If it's too much, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't fit in the box. You dismiss it. And you know, even what you're doing, Sydney, is you're telling people don't dismiss it, right? As far as people, you know, your age having experiences, I'm still a huge believer in that you guys are not off the table here. But do you think your parents or your parents' generation, maybe even grandparents, are starting to come forward more today with what they've experienced because it's a safer environment now?
I'd say for some reason it does feel like a safer environment. I don't know if this is just the bubble that I'm in, on social media and like with my types of friends, but it feels like more people are open to like the beyond or the unknown than like in previous like decades. Perhaps because maybe like the grip of like religion is loosening a little bit and people are like, with like the expansion of civil rights, gay rights, all that kind of thing. Maybe people are like open to what used to be considered weird or even pathological now. Maybe it's just like in the political atmosphere. But it does feel
Nice.
to be the case, yeah.
Yeah. And it's needed. Yeah.
Do you find that like the people you know who've been like in the university student sort of sphere who have begun to take this seriously, that there's a kind of like ontological shock that they go through, and either if they've had their own experience or just finding out that there's like this fairly, reputable body of research that suggests that there's something really weird out there?
I can definitely see it in people who come to the club because for a lot of them, it's the first time they're hearing these facts. And I would say the most like earth-shattering facts are when we pull up clips from Congress people talking about it. Shout out Matt Laszlo, who's a really good reporter for the congressional side of things. So like, yeah, when I play clips from his reporting, people are just like, oh, I never would have thought that congressional representatives and senators were investigating the UFO problem, and it just blows their mind. And then they really want to know more, and they're like, well, why are they so involved in the subject? And then you get into the science and the data that we have, and Arrow is a big thing for people. The fact that the government has a website with real UFO videos, that makes a big difference. And like, it's just not reported enough. And so I think the biggest thing we've done as a club so far is actually kind of drop the bombshell of these things that I think the media needs to pay more attention to.
Maybe that's just your job right now. Your position, your job is to just continuously drop the like the evidence bombs and show people that you're not crazy if you think that this is worth talking about. And it's kind of funny to hear you say what things are like mind-blowing to them, because if you after a few years of being in this interest in this sphere, you think, well, everybody must know this, obviously. But the fact is, I guess there's tons and tons of people who don't know that there's like a government UFO office
Oh,
and
that's
that
frustrating.
there's
It's frustrating.
legislation on this that talks about non-human entities. It's just insane. So maybe we're missing the mark in trying to reach out to people. We need to just tell them the basic truth over and over and over until that becomes part of the sort of communal narrative.
Yeah, and to tell the truth, Sydney, we would be more than happy to help you out. And send some information forward about what you're doing to the community at large and see if we could get people to help you out with the club as well. The more people we can throw your way to help this, build a bigger movement at Yale, we're more than happy to do that. I got contacts and I could send you, or at least contact them and say, hey, could you please do that for Sydney and help you out as much as we can. Sydney, before we let you go, is there anything you want to promote? Talk about, and most importantly, where can people find you to reach out to you about the Yale University?
Just follow YSUS, Yale Student UFO Society. That's at Yale Student UFO Society on Instagram. That is our only social media right now. But welcome to discuss the subject with anybody. And just look for me in the movies in a couple years. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, exactly. Look for credits in the movies and screenwriting. I mean, I think you would make a great focus a lot on ufology and events that have taken place as a screenwriter. I think that's gold. People are going to want more of that content going forward because this is going to come, it's going to become prevalent in our society. And people are going to want these stories to be told. And I think, you know, if you're studying screenwriting and you're into UFOs, you're going to do just fine, which is awesome. I'd like to thank you so much, Denny, for your time. This is awesome. Your story hits home with a lot of people. There's so many people that are going through what you're going through. Weird experiences. It's not just a sighting, but the weird guys that tend to show up afterwards, which I think we do more damage as a species to ourselves than whatever it is they're doing. It's more what we do following these events. I mean, us, I mean, our species. There's war crimes, there's or human crimes involved in this. Your rights, you're violated. And it's not just by the entities, but it's by the clandestine organizations as well. So, you know, keep up the good fight and know that you have friends now, you know, amongst the podcast here. And you know, we're more than willing to help you out and send people your way and get you connected to the right people to really boost up what you're doing and give you that good push that you know for the club to get people just crowded in those rooms and watching your presentation. Absolutely. Michael, do you have any final questions for Cindy today?
My standard final question: what are the three books, or if you want movies, or combination that you would recommend for people who want to understand the phenomenon in the way that you think it's so interesting?
Okay, in terms of movies, I have to shout out Prey and Arrival. Superb, both of them.
Excellent choices. Excellent choices.
I love strong female representation. And in addition, a book, which unfortunately I haven't read yet, but I hope it's going to be good. I just am super interested in it. It's Space Age Indians by Artie Sixkiller Clark.
Oh,
Supposedly,
wow. Oh, yeah. We know him.
abductions of Native Americans. So Yale has a, I love Yale. They have the interlibrary loan, so I'm getting that book for free, thankfully, but
Nice.
looking forward to that. Yeah.
Yeah, there's some perks of being at Yale, right? You
Yep.
got to use them. You got to use them. You're there. You're paying for it. You might as well use them. Awesome. Well, let's catch up with you again. Let's say, you know, a couple of months from now, let's catch up with you, see what you're up to. And like I said, we are going to throw your name out there. We're going to try to get people to help you out as much as possible. This is about helping everybody get started. And you know, this podcast always promotes people to get off the couch, get out of the car, and actually help out. And you're doing that. You're living proof of that. And super, super freaking proud of you, Sydney, to have taken this on and to keep at it. That's the most important part. Be consistent with it. You're doing awesome. So thank you so much for your time, Sydney. Appreciate it.
Thanks for being
Thanks
here.
so
We'll talk
much.
to you again soon.
Attention! Be steady.